Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is June 5th, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
And I'm Summer Lee.
So, Summer, the big news this week globally has been this protest movement that has exploded. It's been around for a while. Black Lives Matter, related to police brutality, mainly against Black people in the U.S. It's now spread to Europe, and I don't think there's been any big protests in Asia that I've seen yet, but definitely spurred a lot of conversation in all of the countries that we cover. Have you been following things?
Yep. And yeah, I don't know. It feels like every morning is just waking up and seeing what else has the police done, you know, in efforts to control the crowd. And it's not really happy news, I would say.
Yeah, it's very heavy, and it's kind of like out of the frying pan and into the fire. Before that, you know, COVID-19 and the coronavirus pandemic just dominating our news and dominating our lives, and really this feeling of apocalypse was already existing. And then we see these images of mass protests, oftentimes having violence involved. Protesters burned down the police station in Minneapolis, and there has been looting and destruction of property, but there's also been a lot of police brutality. That's probably what you've seen a lot of, Summer, because I know you're on Twitter. It's been all over Twitter, and it's really interesting because I saw an article about it. I think it was in the New York Times about how there is a disconnect between older people and or people who just are not on Twitter, who are only watching the news, which oftentimes does focus more on the looting.
Tucker Carlson.
Exactly.
That can't be your main news source, man.
And yeah, not even Fox News, but like just in general, the news doesn't have the raw clips of the police brutality as much, whereas that's all over Twitter. So people are really getting a different impression of what's going on. A lot of people who are all over Twitter are just seeing nonstop police brutality. And there have been countless, there's been dozens and hundreds of real raw videos of police acting absolutely inappropriately and beating the shit out of people.
Unprovoked,
pepper spraying people.
Tear-gassing crowds.
Tear-gassing people. Of course, there was Donald Trump, who removed protesters who were protesting peacefully from around the White House to go do a stupid-ass photo op in front of a church, which, as far as I can tell, has totally backfired and made me look like an idiot. It's a really defining feature of this movement, I think, is this different perception that people have, that some people are like, well, this is just looting and destruction, and other people are like, this is just rampant police brutality, and it has to do with where they consume media. But I think one of the most interesting and I think heartening and positive things about this movement is, well, I wouldn't say one of the most heartening and positive, but a really great thing from our perspective here in Coconuts, where we're covering Southeast Asia and Hong Kong, is how it spurred conversations in our places about race and racism.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk a lot about that more on this episode, and stay tuned, and we'll get right to it.
Yay.
This episode is brought to you by Raise Technology's self-sanitizing coatings. Raise is a nano photocatalyst technology leading brand that has coatings for any surface, from textiles to woods to ceramics. Raise has been trusted by Hong Kong's public transport sector to protect their customers. Express shipping delivers within 4 days to any country, so you can share the new hygiene standard with your loved ones around the world. Visit www.nanoraise.com for more information. That's www.nanoraze.com.
And now for our top stories. We'll start off in Singapore, where an Ang Mo Kio grocer is super sorry for overcharging a snacky man 1,000 Singapore dollars.
Oops.
Yeah, so Ang Mo Kio is a residential district in Singapore, and yeah, a local minimart in Ang Mo Kio said today that it tracked down a customer it overcharged by over 1,000 Singapore dollars. For a total, yeah, that was a total amount of $1,397 instead of the $1,397 for this dude's Sunday snacks and drinks. And the grocer even posted a selfie with him online to show that all was forgiven.
This was a very popular story. I think, yeah, it's just a nice feel-good story. Everybody loves it. They found the dude. It was like 1347 or something. Should have been 1347. Instead, they charged them $1,347.
Oh, yeah, 97, but yeah.
Everybody wins. He got like a lifetime free snacks card or something like that, which is great for him. So all in all, it was a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
Yay.
Love it.
Moving on to Bangkok. In Bangkok, there's a Black Lives Matter rally set for this Sunday. I think details are sparse, and at this point, it is actually unclear as to whether it's going to be purely digital and online or whether there will be a physical rally. But I actually talked to Todd in Bangkok, our editor there, and he, I believe, is speaking to one of the organizers who I believe is an African-American man, expat based in Bangkok. So this could be one of the first examples of an actual physical rally, or it certainly is going to be something. It may end up being only digital in Bangkok. So it's really interesting to see this movement go worldwide.
Love to see it. It's like if we have technology for that Taiwanese Shilin market in Singapore, here in Singapore, like going online, we can do anything.
Absolutely. That's a good point. I saw that there was, I think I was a little confused that with the Hong Kong Tiananmen Square vigil, which happened last night, there was a lot of live streams. I thought there was going to be some sort of virtual demonstration, but I think there was, I was wrong. But anyway, yeah, there should be like virtual protests. That's a really interesting idea. You know, they had that big virtual concert with Travis Scott on Fortnite where I think millions of people went. Why can't millions of people go and protest virtually?
Yeah. And I'm wondering what are the implications here in Singapore where protesting is illegal. So can we join it? Can we watch?
Exactly. It's a way to bypass, you know, physical crackdowns on protests. So we may be seeing more of that. Very interesting.
Yep. And yeah, over in Bali, Bali beaches are actually reopening, but only for foreign surfers to uphold an image. And this is straight out from an official's mouth, where foreign surfers in Bali are now officially permitted to access two beaches in Bali's Badung Regency. And the concession, however, is plainly discriminatory as it does not apply to local residents who are instead asked to remain patient while staying at home. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about this, but yeah, where Badung Regency, where some of the Bali's, sorry, where some of Bali's most popular beaches are located, has seen a number of surfers sneaking through the bushes and attempting to trespass barricades in order to catch some waves. What?
They've been desperate for some tasty barrels up there in Bali. Did it say what beaches it is exactly that people can now surf at or what breaks?
Let me confirm. Oh, okay. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. These two beaches are Labuan Said and Canggu. The waves, the waves there are popular among surfers. And yeah, it's quite a hot spot.
Yeah, Canggu's huge. Yeah, that's not fair. WTF, mate. That's blatantly unfair.
And this official said, like, foreigners cited mental health concerns after staying at home for the past few months. What about the residents, dude?
Yeah. I definitely have noticed a pattern, and I think this happens everywhere, but in Bali, we've been covering it a lot lately of officials saying just random ass shit, which I'm not even sure if they have the authority to enact. So I don't know if that's the case here, but yeah, very unfair. But I know that Julianne, who's on the ground in Bali for us, working for Coconuts, has been struggling herself. She's a big surfer and she's dying to get out in the water. They're not allowing swimming or surfing or any, you know, water activities. So she's taken up skating and she's skateboarding. She's skateboarding everywhere. But yeah, big population in Bali wants to get back in the waves. But I would say let the local Indonesians do it too, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Moving on to Manila, we had another, every week there's a new outrage, right? At some influencer or TikTok star doing or saying something moronic. I think we maybe should have a regular segment about this, but basically in Manila in the Philippines, fury erupted after a TikTok star, DJ Luño, said that mass testing for COVID should not be mandatory. Basically, fury, facepalms, and a dash of head-scratching amusement erupted on social media after videos of TikTok personality DJ Luño made the rounds, in which he claimed that mass testing isn't even 100% proven and therefore shouldn't be mandatory. He's a 24-year-old disc jockey, and he basically said it's not 100% proven. It shouldn't be mandatory. It should be encouraged, but it will depend on if you want to test yourself. So I think he kind of got canceled, and let's see if he actually apologized. Doesn't look like yet, but I'm sure he probably will soon, because that's not really a statement that's grounded in scientific fact whatsoever.
That's a hot take and like a horrifically wrong one, I would say. What do you mean we shouldn't test? How would you know otherwise that people have the virus or not? What?
It's a head scratcher.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been watching anti-vaccine and anti-COVID-19 videos on YouTube and stuff. Probably.
He thinks that 5G is the cause. Maybe. I wouldn't know.
Yes.
But yeah, back in Singapore, a posh Peranakan restaurant is sorry for swiping an Indonesian dish. But yeah, this upscale Peranakan restaurant in Singapore has apologized and renamed a newly launched dish after it was called out for hijacking Indonesian cuisine. So the restaurant in question is Violet Un Singapore, and it was accused of appropriating the Nasi Ambeng Indonesian dish by adding a Peranakan twist to its name with the word Nyonya. So the restaurant has since apologized and renamed the Nyonya Nasi Ambeng trays to family trays.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't think like the words Nasi Ambeng cultural appropriation would be, you know, would be said anytime by me, but this is happening, and yeah, it's just weird times.
So can you explain, Summer, for people who may not know, what a Peranakan and Nyonya is and how that is different from being Indonesian? And what are kind of the dynamics between groups here?
Okay, yeah, this one, right? Let me check, because like, I don't know, in my head, like Peranakan is, how to say, it's a mix of Malay and Chinese culture.
Yeah, I think it's kind of that, isn't Nasi Ambeng Javanese?
Yeah,
very, Japanese, like, distinctively good. Javanese, like it's not Peranakan, even though there are Peranakans in parts of Indonesia, especially like Medan, right, in Sumatra.
Oh, okay. I actually did not know that. But yeah, that's actually a good explanation.
Yeah, it was basically cultural appropriation, and the restaurant got semi-canceled, but just changed the name, and
And yeah, the prices at Violent Un, they are not very cheap. They're kind of, so for them to, you know, appropriate this Javanese dish, it's oof.
I think that was part of the dynamic too, right?
Like, yeah.
Nasi Ambeng is a more affordable meal that is not really meant to be made super fancy and cost a lot of money.
For sure.
So back to Bangkok, biggest story I think of the week in Bangkok was the fact that the Thai health minister had a fantastic meal with all of his cronies and his hangers-on and other Thai health ministry officials, totally violating all of the health guidelines that they have been asking Thais to follow for weeks and months. So this was quite an outrage. It was funny because it seems like the restaurant where he ate, which looked like a seafood restaurant on the ocean, posted photos saying, oh, check it out. The Thai health minister is here. He's a very prominent official in Thailand. One of the most famous officials, especially recently, has been on TV all the time talking about guidelines for COVID-19. And then he was basically outed by this restaurant. Not on purpose. They were just kind of bragging and saying, check it out, the Thai health minister is here, but violating all of the health guidelines that he had been, you know, asking everybody to do. Coconuts Bangkok wrote, while the public is implored to remain vigilant about social distancing and be patient with strict rules, it seems Thailand's top health official and his gang forgot that it applies to them as well. Public anger was stoked anew yesterday by photos showing public health minister Anutin Charnvirakul, who withdrew early in the pandemic after putting his foot in his mouth too many times, dining with other officials without the social distancing or tacky plastic barriers the common rabble have been asked to endure.
Mm.
One guy wrote somewhere on the internet, "They keep telling citizens to stay at home and we obey. I haven't taken my mother and child anywhere for almost 3 months now, and these pics make me feel really bad." So yeah, I think a classic case of do as I say, don't do as I do, / privilege that and elite.
The virus is dangerous.
yeah, feeling that the rules don't apply to us.
Oh, and isn't this the same guy that said, like, fucking Farang should be kicked out of the kingdom for not wearing masks and all that? Was this the same guy? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he's kind of very gaffe prone. And now, another Facebooker said, "Can I throw these photos in Tawasip's face?" I guess Tawasip is, I'm not actually sure who Tawasip is, but I think it's another health minister who's been the daily spokesman and has told everybody to do certain things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, bad look. It's kind of happened all over the world. You had Boris Johnson's top deputy, I think Dominic Cummings, who violated the coronavirus rules in the UK to drive up to Durham. And you had, I believe, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump in the U.S. who also violated lockdown rules to go to New Jersey. So
wasn't like Mike Pence running around the actual Mayo Clinic without a mask?
Bingo. Yeah. Amazing. There's too many to count. Mm-mm. Officials just, I guess there's an attitude of rules don't apply to us. But people are uprising. So let's see what happens.
And over in KL. More rule breaking as like there's a police raid in Petaling Jaya nightclub with like nearly 100 partygoers. Oh my gosh. But yeah, it was an expensive night out for 98 partygoers in Petaling Jaya in the wee hours of Monday after police raided the unnamed nightclub for allegedly breaching the Conditional Movement Control Order, or the CMCO. Among them was a 39-year-old man who was arrested for allegedly hiring foreigners, including three women aged 21 to 40 without permits, and for selling alcoholic beverages illegally. And yeah, the three women were also detained for allegedly violating their visas by not possessing a work permit. And another two women were actually taken into police custody after testing positive for drugs.
Oops.
All this in the middle of a pandemic. What?
This is definitely the biggest party I've heard about in our region during the pretty much overall lockdown, where everything's been locked down. We had that small party in Bali where that seemed like there was maybe 20 people in a house party.
Yeah, the French people.
Yeah. That was a different one. We had the small party in Bali. It was expats in Bali, maybe 20 people. Then there was the French people in Koh Samui. In Thailand. That just looked like about 15 people, but they all got arrested. Mm-hmm. And now this is 100. This was like a full-on rave.
I don't know, one of those like COVID parties in America.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
People, I guess, had to get their rave on, but good on them. They showed some spunk to really, they wanted to party no matter what, but no, bad on them, because that could be a super spreader event. Not cool. Follow the COVID guidelines. Wait a little bit longer. People will be able to party, we think, soon. Or have a micro party with just a few friends. You don't need 100.
For sure. I'll get on Zoom. People are doing that now. Those Zoom parties. Love it.
Do you? I don't like them.
I mean, I'm glad they exist for the people.
They're better than nothing, for sure. Yeah. But like, I'm kind of like, for me, they were fun like once. Mm. I was like, okay, the novelty has worn off. I'm not just going to stand here and like drink my drink. And I mean, it's fun to have a video chat, whether it's Zoom or whatever, with a small group of your friends. I guess I actually went to one where like I didn't know anybody, or I didn't know a lot of the people.
Oh, yeah. I went there.
So just like people dancing. It's actually pretty cool. There's these people who've been having these like DJs playing, and anyone can come. And there will be like 20 to 40 people. Everybody's on Zoom, but it's like, yeah, I'm at home with my wife. And I guess I just wasn't feeling the vibes as much as I should have been to really get into it.
At least you're not going to a party with like 100 people.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Moving on, our last story of the day is actually two stories that I wanted to talk about, one in Singapore and one in Bali, which we can actually start with Bali. Both kind of inspired and related to this massive protest movement against racism, which has started and is biggest in the U.S. but really spurred conversations around the globe. In Bali, our editor Shani wrote a story about how these protests are really causing Indonesians to take a look at their own attitudes and their own policies within Indonesia, and confront racism that exists very much in Indonesia against Papuan people who are from Papua in far eastern Indonesia on the same island as Papua New Guinea. They are a different ethnicity from most Indonesians and they face a lot of racism. I'll read an excerpt from the story. Priscilla Yigi, a student from Papua, said that what happened in the US is revealing to the world how racism is still very much a problem in our world today. In Indonesia, many are also voicing Black Lives Matter, but unfortunately, Indonesians are still racist towards Papuans, and this is still happening today, she said. The 25-year-old who is enrolled in a government studies postgraduate program in Jakarta says that students from Papua are often subject to discrimination, giving the example of a university rector who she says would go as far to claim that members of Papuan tribes are cannibals. As an indigenous Papuan, statements like these hurt, but I don't have the power to retort, she said, arguing that years of systemic racism and discrimination have robbed her and her people of their voice. So I think this is a really great feature on Coconuts Bali that you can check out, highlighting that I think it's kind of trendy, obviously, to be on board with the Black Lives Matter movement. You see a lot of influencers and people who may be of the majority ethnicity in countries like Indonesia or Singapore are saying, yeah, Black Lives Matter. But they're not, at the same time, they're not aware and they're not doing anything about the racism that exists right in their backyard.
For sure.
And another example of this is the other story I wanted to talk about in Singapore, where basically a conversation sprouted online about the fact that many were, again, supporting Black Lives Matter, who at the same time were basically might be being racist or not having any awareness about racism that exists against migrant workers here in Singapore, who are often South Asian from Bangladesh and from India. What this guy wrote online is, before we Singaporeans start using the hashtag Black Lives Matter and hashtag All Lives Matter to express our outrage at the killings of George Floyd, I think he got that wrong. Nobody's using All Lives Matter is the opposite.
Unless you're one of the K-pop stan accounts and you're flooding the All Lives Matter and White Lives Matter hashtags with like fan cams of your favorite K-pop stars, then good job. Yes.
Then awesome.
Yep.
But anyway, he basically said, before we Singaporeans start using the Black Lives Matter hashtag to express our outrage at the killing of George Floyd, which is important, don't get me wrong, perhaps we should take a good hard look at our own racism. He added, after the government announced it was building more dorms for migrant workers, there were some disgusting comments put out by Singaporeans. Why? These migrant workers built the homes you so comfortably live in and typed these racist comments from. So another example of, I think, local people calling out that, hey, you don't have to, I mean, sure, absolutely support Black Lives Matter, which is very much a US-based movement, but let's talk about the racism and the rights of the people who are oppressed and the minority groups that are right here in our own backyard and in our countries. Yep. So I think it's really great that people are having these conversations.
Yeah, for sure. I think like if this is, this Black Lives Matter movement, like if it's a kind of stepping stone into addressing our own racism and colorism in our own country, that's a good thing. But of course, there are all these influences that are merely jumping on the bandwagon. And
yeah,
y'all jumped up the second like it was time to post a black square. But you know, the point of that Blackout Tuesday act of putting those black squares on the timeline is to take a day to stop yourself from posting like your Dalgona coffees for a second and focus it on the Black Lives Matter movement and educating yourself. I think that sentiment was a bit lost with people clogging up the Black Lives Matter hashtag instead of using the Blackout Tuesday hashtag. There's a whole thing. But yeah, if it's a stepping stone, I'm for it. And I think that cancel culture or call out culture can be a bit, you know, toxic in a sense. But yeah, we just need to be able to hold these, to facilitate these discourse and start talking about these issues, I think.
Yeah, it's really important. And I think it's, again, I hope and believe, I'm an optimist, that really good things are going to come out of this movement.
Yes.
And we're seeing huge protests. I just saw some images on Twitter, of course, of Paris and Amsterdam and London. Yes. And New Zealand, where there's been huge protests. And protesting is illegal here in Singapore, basically, without a permit. So I don't know if it's going to happen here unless it happens virtually. But just having this discussion and seeing that there might be protests in Bangkok and maybe in Jakarta, I think it's really, really good because, racism still exists in our region and exists in the U.S. And people don't talk about it. And the fact that people are talking about it now and it's out in the open and people who have been oppressed and people who have been the subject of racism are feeling empowered to talk about it, I think it's a really positive thing that hopefully continues based on this movement.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of protests, our feature interview this week is with Coconuts Hong Kong Associate Editor Hilary Leung. We spoke about last night's vigil in Hong Kong for the 31st anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. This vigil went on against the rules. For the first year ever, Hong Kong banned gatherings on June 4th, the anniversary of the massacre. But thousands of people in Hong Kong violated that order and turned out anyways, mainly peacefully. Let's have a listen. So we are here with Hilary Leung, the new associate editor for Coconuts Hong Kong, who is on the ground in Hong Kong. How you doing, Hilary?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good. Tell us about yesterday and last night in Hong Kong. It was the 31st anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre, basically. And this was the first year that demonstrations were prohibited. How did things go last night in Hong Kong?
So even though the demonstration was prohibited, thousands of people defied the police ban anyway. Mm-hmm. Defied the police ban and showed up at Victoria Park, where the vigil is held annually. A lot of people showed up. There were, I think, a couple thousand of people. And from some angles of the park, it seemed to be as crowded as it was, just any other year. And I think the reason why people came out in the thousands that they did is because there were reports earlier saying that police were going to be restrained tonight and were not going to intervene, even if people did gather at the park. And I think that is the reason why people were encouraged to come out. And yeah, it was peaceful. The police stood by outside, but they never set foot into the premise. It made, obviously, for a very different vigil compared to previous years. So there was no organizer, there was no big stage. So, there weren't speakers on stage recounting their experiences of witnessing Tiananmen Square. There wasn't a band leading pro-democracy songs. So instead, it was just a lot of, just very quiet, lighting of candles and chanting of protest slogans as well. And one thing that we have never seen at the at this vigil that's held every year, but that we did see yesterday, was protesters chanting pro-independence slogans, which have sort of been a commonly chanted slogan in the past weeks.
Mm-hmm. Pro-independence slogan.
Yeah, the pro-independence slogan was chanted a lot last night. And I think it is just a reflection of the localist sentiment being on the rise here in Hong Kong and a rejection of, all things mainland.
Sure. So, got it. I didn't know that there was that kind of word put out that the police were not going to crack down, because I was surprised, not being as not following Hong Kong politics as closely as you, that people did defy the ban and show up. So I guess, was that not very surprising? And it was kind of, the word was put out that people were going to demonstrate and that the police were probably not going to crack down on Victoria Park?
Yeah, so there were calls for people to gather at Victoria Park starting from around mid-afternoon yesterday on a popular forum called LIHKG. Mm-hmm. So people were basically encouraging each other to come out to Victoria Park. But besides for just coming out to Victoria Park, there were also calls to just attend the vigil in your community. So there were district councillors and other organizers who were organizing these mini vigils across Hong Kong, Kowloon, and New Territories. So it wasn't just Victoria Park that saw a lot of people come out, but the small vigils did see quite a significant turnout too.
Sure. And you wrote a story about the virtual vigils and the virtual events that were put on, I believe, for the first time, you know, yes, due to the fact that demonstrations were banned. Any reports on those as to how those went? And do you think that's something that's going to continue to happen in the future?
Yeah, so I don't believe this is the very first year that they've done the live stream. I think that they've done it in the past, and even if they didn't, local media would have live streamed it anyway. But I think that this is the first year that they sort of, not advertised, but put it out in the way that they did.
Yeah.
In the lead up to the vigil. I'm not too sure what kind of response the online vigil got, because it seemed like most of the people had gone out either to Victoria Park or to the vigil in their community anyway. I think that in the coming years, whether or not the Tiananmen vigil is even going to be legal or to go ahead in Hong Kong is quite uncertain due to the national security laws that are going to be enacted in the city.
Sure. And so this is a big question, but can you tell us about that law that was recently passed and summarize it for people who may not be as familiar? What does the law say and what does it mean for Hong Kong? And the law was passed in Beijing this past week, right? Or is it not fully passed yet?
I believe the terminology is that it's been approved in the legislature, but there are still deliberations that are going to be held, and the text of the law has not been drafted yet.
Got it.
So we're still a little bit away from that, but it is expected that everything is just going to go smoothly from here.
Sure.
So according to the basic law, Hong Kong has the responsibility to enact a national security legislation in the city. Mm-hmm. And the aim of that is to prevent acts that are deemed as seditious or as threatening one-party rule from taking place. And in 2003, the legislature in Hong Kong attempted to deliberate the law with the intention of passing it. But due to popular protest, I believe it was 500,000 people who took to the streets.
Yeah.
The law was shelved, basically, and it was not brought up for discussion again. Over the past month, in May, the Beijing legislature announced that they were going to tailor-make this law for Hong Kong and impose it in the city and bypass our legislature, meaning that it will not be brought forward for discussion or for deliberation by our city lawmakers. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that sparked a lot of criticism and backlash, and many people called it a violation of one country, two systems. And a lot of foreign politicians spoke up for Hong Kong and said the same thing. So at the moment, the law has been approved in Beijing's top legislature. Mm-hmm. But in the coming weeks, lawmakers in Beijing are set to deliberate and to draft the text of the law. And the common criticism is that the law could be used to crack down on the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong. I think that seems to be a very likely possibility, but it remains to be seen exactly how the law is going to be used, because the text is still being drafted yet, and we don't actually have any concrete details about what the law would actually entail.
Got it. And so, I think it's basically many are saying the end of one country, two systems, whereby Hong Kong has its own laws, its own freedom of speech standards. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's really one of the first times that Beijing has really heavy-handedly implemented a law in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as you said, there's a lot of uncertainty as to what does this law mean? How much is it actually going to be enforced? So from your opinion on the ground in Hong Kong, what is the sentiment amongst, I guess, just normal people? Let's talk about normal people first as to, is this law like the end of Hong Kong as we know it, or is it not actually a big deal because they're not really going to enforce it? Because you do kind of hear both of those arguments.
So there are two sides to it. So pro-establishment lawmakers fully support the law, of course. Mm-hmm. They see it as necessary to stop protests from emerging in the way that they did last year, where there was a lot of where there was very significant effect on the Hong Kong economy, and unemployment rose very sharply as a result of the violent protests. Mm-hmm. So they see the law as necessary to stop, you know, the protests from escalating in the way that they did last year. And what lawmakers in Hong Kong are also saying, the ones who support the law are maintaining that it's not going to repress freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And that the law will not be imposed arbitrarily. It is only if you, you know, intentionally try to break the law that you will be punished for it. And on the other hand, you have the pro-democracy camp who are saying that the national security law is basically the end of one country, two systems, because Beijing is able to bypass our city's legislature and just impose it without any deliberation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are worried that this could mean events like the Tiananmen Square vigil would not be able to take place. And this is also, it's a possibility because the national security laws stipulate that acts of sedition and secession are illegal. And for example, at the Tiananmen Square vigil, a commonly chanted slogan is to call for the end of one-party rule.
Yeah.
And so that, depending on how the language of that law is written, could easily be considered a violation, and you could be imprisoned and fined for that. So that's what a lot of people who are criticizing the law are fearing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, again, knowing a fair bit, but not following things super closely, I was really surprised. I was like, this seems like this gathering and the things that they would chant and the cause that they are espousing would be a violation of this new law. But it seems like the vigil was able to go on. And maybe the way the CCP justifies that is that the law hasn't fully been enacted yet. Who knows? But I think one of the really defining characteristics of the situation right now, correct me if I'm wrong, is just this uncertainty. It's like people don't really know how things are going to be enforced and what the future of the law in Hong Kong is.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm on the board of the Society of Publishers in Asia, which is one of the main and biggest trade advocacy groups, I would say, promoting the media industry and freedom of speech throughout Asia. I can definitely say that members of the SOPA are really worried about the law. I know the FCC, the Foreign Correspondents Club of Hong Kong, has put out statements against it. You're a journalist, just joined Coconuts. Previously, you were working at Time Magazine, the venerable American news magazine. What are you hearing from folks in the media and in journalism as to how things are going to change, if at all, due to this new law?
Yeah. Again, there's a lot of uncertainty because we don't know what the language of the text would be. But I think that there is definitely fear that publications might cease to exist, or that that certain keywords might be censored and that we wouldn't be able to report in the way that we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
newspapers, local newspapers like Apple Daily, I believe, could be a target of the law because they are very openly pro-democracy. And they, for example, will hold fundraisers to support the pro-democracy cause, things like that. So I think it's papers like that that, you know, that really could be threatened when this law is passed in Hong Kong. There is also concern that that foreign journalists in Hong Kong might have their visas revoked and might not be allowed to work in Hong Kong anymore. I think that that is also a very real concern, given that China has revoked the working visas, the journalist passes of a couple of reporters from Wall Street Journal and other publications. The FCC, as you mentioned, and also the Hong Kong Journalists Association has been speaking out very actively about this. It remains to be seen how or whether or not freedom of the press in Hong Kong will be affected with the passing of the law.
Yeah, just total uncertainty. And it's funny because I think it's Matthew Cheung, the kind of number two guy, and then Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, have both recently, I think Matthew Cheung gave an interview to CNN and Carrie Lam said elsewhere, just like, nothing is going to change. Freedom of speech is going to be the same. But I think everybody knows that that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be what the case is, because they may or may not really have the power to determine that. Switching up totally, just to talk about Tiananmen Square, just to recap for those who may not know, some of the undisputed facts I would say about Tiananmen Square is that there was a massive protest uprising in China, and millions of protesters were in Beijing for months protesting for democracy. And there was a crackdown by the People's Liberation Army, and hundreds or thousands of the protesters were killed. So do you think that's a safe summary?
Yeah, we don't know exactly how many people were killed. I think it's either hundreds or thousands. We have no idea. The protests, protesters started gathering at Tiananmen Square, I believe, in mid-April. Mm-hmm. So protests were ongoing for a little bit less than 2 months before the big crackdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask if you have any personal, within your family, recollections of Tiananmen Square. I don't know if you were even alive then, but what do you know personally, and how does Tiananmen Square affect you, if at all?
Right. So I was not alive during Tiananmen Square, so I didn't have a recollection in that sense. My parents were both born and raised in Hong Kong, and I believe my mom was not in Asia, was not in Hong Kong at the time of the Tiananmen Square. And I think she was also just a little bit removed from politics on this side of the world. Mm-hmm. But I know that my father was paying very close attention to the political developments in Beijing.
Yeah.
He told me that the day after Tiananmen Square, there was a local newspaper called Meng Pao that published a sort of a special issue of a magazine or some sort of publication that was limited edition, and it was meant to sort of mourn and to grieve the tragedy that just happened. Yeah. And he said that the next day he really wanted to get his hands on one of these on the special issue of that newspaper, but he wasn't able to because it has sold out very quickly. So I think that just goes to show that that Hong Kongers, even though, you know, they are on the side of the border, they were paying very close attention to the state, or rather the lack of democracy in China, and that they really stood by the people in China who were advocating for democracy in their country.
Sure. Wow. So yeah, just a final question. There's been talk of, and reporting on Coconuts Hong Kong, of Hong Kongers wanting to leave Hong Kong, looking to go to the UK or the US or Taiwan. And yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty and people saying that things are changed forever in Hong Kong due to this new law. What do you think about the future of Hong Kong? And are you hopeful that Hong Kong can retain some of the things that makes it special? Or are you kind of in the doom and gloom camp? I know that's a heavy and big picture question, but yeah, we'd just love to hear your thoughts on the future of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for sure that we are going to see a rise in people relocating away from Hong Kong. I think we are already starting to see a huge spike in the number of people applying or applying to renew their British national overseas passports, which Boris Johnson, I think, has come out to say that they could potentially extend privileges to people who hold these passports. So I think in the coming years, we are going to see a lot of people just moving away from Hong Kong, both individuals and businesses. Mm-hmm. And I'm personally not very optimistic about the future of Hong Kong in terms of its freedoms and its autonomy. I think that the way that protests have dwindled very significantly from last year also goes to show that people are sort of getting increasingly frustrated and feeling increasingly helpless, that it seems like no matter how many people come out, that China can still, you know, pass a law and impose it in Hong Kong without any deliberations here.
Yeah.
So I think that there is this sense of futility at the moment that people do not feel like their protests are going to change anything anymore. I think, yeah, the overall outlook for Hong Kong in the years to come is generally, at least to me, on the pessimistic side.
Sure. Well, regardless of what happens, we'll continue covering it. And thanks, Hillary, for having the chat today. Really appreciate you taking the time. And have a great Friday.
Yeah, thank you, Byron.
So that's it for the Coconuts podcast today, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reading Coconuts. Thank you for watching our videos. Don't forget to tune in tonight, June 5th, 6 p.m. on our YouTube for the fourth episode of ISO Date, our very fun live social reality TV experiment where people go on a totally blind date, having never met each other before, live by video chat, and we watch it and comment on YouTube. It's really fun. That is on youtube.com/coconutsTV. Feel free to subscribe and hit the bell notification button. As always, we are very much appreciative and looking for your support, the support of our audience. There are two ways that you can do that. You can go to coconuts.co/membership and become a Coco Plus member, or go to coconuts.co/patron and make a patron payment. You can also buy a Coconuts white tee. We have beautiful, simple Coconuts logo white tees, which we're selling online on Teespring. Go to coconuts.co, look for an ad, and you'll find it pretty quickly. Those are on sale until the end of June. Thanks for listening this week, guys, and we will be back next week.
The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Vim Shanmugam, and Summer Lee. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez.